Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to Thursday, March 11th, 2021. Now in our 11th year, right here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. And our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on BuckmasterShow.com, and also an extensive archive, 10 years, more than 10 years worth of programs at BuckmasterShow.com. And we usually have, thanks to my assistant, Tom gets the ball rolling on this, and then Rosemary Brandt. The two of them make sure that the podcasts are up and ready to go, usually an hour, couple of hours after the conclusion of our program at 1. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the CEO of the Tucson Association of Realtors, Randy Rogers, is with us. Randy, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Well, it has been a couple of months. We kind of did a year-end thing with you, trying to get a feel for where the market is. Randy, in our 10 minutes together, today is the one-year anniversary of COVID-19, the pandemic being declared. Where were we a year ago now as far as Tucson real estate, and where are we 12 months later?
So a year ago, Bill, we were a hot market. Hot market meaning that, you know, properties were selling very rapidly. Cost of homes, if you were selling, was rising at a moderate rate. Of course, at that time, interest rates were remaining low and continued to be dropping. The economy was robust. We hit the pandemic, and we really had no idea what was going to happen next. The realtor community pivoted, to use an overused word, to do open houses virtually because there was still a need. Consumers still wanted to buy houses, so they found ways to make it happen. A year later, we are. To say the market is hot is probably one of the greatest understatements I could make in the month of March. We judge it by a couple different ways. We judge it by days on market. So a year ago, days on market was at 44 days on market, meaning you could put your house on the market and within 2 months, if it was priced right and you were in a good location, you'd sell that house. Today, we're down to 25 days on market.
Wow. Less than a month?
Less than a month. And that causes a ripple effect for the consumer as well as the seller. For the seller, it means if you put your house on the market, you better be ready that you're going to sell it. You know, the days of you sitting around saying, hey, honey, we ought to consider selling. Let's put our house out there and just see if we can get some price. It is not unheard of that we would sell a house, that there are houses that sell with 10 offers in the first day,
wow,
if not even in the first hour. So that's a pretty, pretty crazy market to be in. You couple that with another spot we're at, and that is very low inventory. We're down to about a half a month's worth of inventory. A healthy market, a robust market, is somewhere in the 4 to 6 range, 4 to 6 months. And given, a year ago, we were less than 2 months. 2 years ago, we were still only about 2.5 months of inventory. So this has been a long-term problem with us, which speaks to the incredible growth of Tucson. Is really what it speaks to, is that this is a market that people want to move to and continue to move to. So as I say, we're hot is an understatement of all understatements right now.
It is smoking, Randy Rogers. How's that?
It is smoking.
Yeah.
It is smoking.
So what does this do to price, the price point, Randy?
Well, there's no question it drives up the price point. If I look at median sales, we're up 11% or $30,000, up to $290,000 is our median home price. The average price is up almost 20%. We're up to $361,000 in average sale price. These are numbers over a year ago at this point in time. That's just, you know, most houses are selling at list price or higher. So again, from a buyer's perspective, they've got to be prepared to walk into an offer knowing that if that house is $250,000, they may need to buy it for $260,000 or $270,000, because those are the kinds of offers that are coming in.
How about the inventory as far as new housing? Do we have new housing coming online or not enough of it, Randy Rogers?
We have an incredible partnership with our team at the SABA, the Southern Arizona Home Builders, and the new home construction, they're building as fast as they can. But it's just not enough. I mean, it's been a lag time over the last couple of years, not by anything negative, more just that we have not been able to keep up that new home construction over the last few years, and especially in the last 12 months. But they're working as hard as they can to get there.
What are your members telling you, Randy Rogers? Who are these folks that are buying up these homes? Are they people moving out of California, the Pacific Northwest, the Chicago area? Who are these people?
Yeah, we don't track the data as to exactly where their home comes from that person comes from, but through conversations, through constant surveying of our members, just to find out. We certainly are getting an influx from California. There is no doubt that California is a big driver. And I would say the entire West Coast, Seattle, San Francisco, LA, all the way down. But we are also getting a lot of Midwesterners. And there was a talk I did probably 2 years ago now that talked about, and I said the polar vortex is our friend. Meaning that it's so cold in the Midwest, I want to get out of there.
Yeah.
Well, just 2 weeks ago, we see what happened in all of the country except for our little sliver across Arizona. And so the polar vortex is once again our friend. So they're coming from all over. It is a migration of people here, and that demands higher services. That demands roads, that demands all the things that they're used to and maybe the community that they've been in.
Randy, the trends with the virtual home inspections and the virtual take a look at a home online, is some of that going to stick around, or will there be kind of a hybrid system?
I think we will see a hybrid system, but a home is still your biggest purchase. Generally, it's your biggest purchase. And so to you can look at it online, and we have all the rules to make sure that you're not, you know, taking away the power lines that might be in your backyard or those types of things. But the general setup, I think we'll see a lot more of the virtual. And that comes from a person being remote wanting to see a home. Yes. If you're living in Chicago or Minneapolis or Seattle, and you're thinking about moving here and you know you have to move quickly, that's your only alternative, because that house probably will not be available. If you say, well, I'm going to be in Tucson in 2 weeks, let's schedule a showing then, I can almost guarantee you, or I would be a betting man and say that house probably won't be available.
Yeah. Real quickly, before we wrap this up, I've got about less than a minute. We haven't talked about interest rates. Is that a factor, Randy Rogers?
It continues to be a positive for the market. I was just on a call yesterday with several economists that anticipate a little bit of trending up in interest rates through 2021 and 2022. We may get into to mid threes, maybe even the upper threes, even lower fours. But for those of you who have been around for years, a 4% interest rate on your home is still a really good interest rate on your home.
Yeah, it is.
So for the next couple of years, we think we're going to be in pretty good shape.
All right, Randy Rogers, always a pleasure. Good catching up with you, Randy, and all the best to you and your team at the Tucson Association of Realtors. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks very much. Randy Rogers, CEO of the Tucson Association of Realtors. Time to talk about my favorite bakery in town. I could sure go for, I think right now I'm in the mood for a blueberry muffin. Haven't talked about that in a while. Was very much into the cinnamon rolls. And, of course, the iconic pastry of Mona's Danish Bakery is the Danish Kringle. So you've got all sorts of opportunities. Open right now for lunch. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast. They're real proud of the revamped website, monasdanishbakery.com. You can put your order in that way. You can call ahead, say, I'd like to come by, have my bakery goods ready in a half an hour. I'll be by. They'll be ready for you. Mona's Danish Bakery, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, back in a moment on the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Tomorrow, the Friday Focus interview will be with Congressman Raul Grijalva Let's go now on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go up now to Tempe and Dr. Dennis Hoffman, director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business up at ASU. And Professor Hoffman has sponsored project efforts include the construction and maintenance of the tax revenue forecasting model used by the Executive Budget Office for the state of Arizona. He's been doing that really for nearly 40 years, going back to 1982. Good to catch up with you again. And Dennis, how are you?
Bill, great to be here. You're making me sound and feel pretty old, though.
You must have just been a teenager when you put that first report.
You're so kind.
You know, you look back over that, and let's start with this is the 1 year anniversary of the pandemic. Lots of people thought, oh my goodness, Arizona is going to take an unbelievable hit. It hasn't happened, has it?
It has not at all. Well, now let's back up. There are pockets of folks that work in particular industries that have really suffered. I mean, let's face it. But the overall economy hit with the dramatic loss of general fund revenues simply did not happen.
Why?
Well, here's the best explanation I can think. It begins with stimulus, and we've had stimulus one, and now we've got mega stimulus round two. That's bolstered spending, kept people in jobs, many people in jobs at least, and injected a lot of money into the state from the federal government. But there's other things going on. People figured out that they could maintain employment in well-to-do jobs remotely, and managers figured out that people could be pretty productive remotely as well. So they were comfortable with that. So a lot of the middle to high income jobs were retained across the economy. And then finally, Bill, you know, I can imagine every summer you're off to San Diego, right? Maybe not this summer.
We were up in June, Southern Oregon, and it was nice to get out of town. But
you understand my point.
So of course.
Many Arizonans travel. They go to California.
Right.
They go to Europe. We stayed home and bought things this
year.
We stayed home and renovated our houses. We bought furniture, we bought new cars, and all of that showed up in tax revenue. And finally, the state wisely adopted a broader administration of remote sales, and that kicked in just before the pandemic hit. So all of those online transactions, unlike in prior years, most of those online transactions captured sales tax revenue. So all of that went together to produce a healthy flow of revenue for us, Bill.
Dennis Hoffman is with us from ASU. Dr. Hoffman, what about the rainy day fund? Where are we right now with that? And what, when you looked at this before this legislative session, what did you anticipate it to be, and where is it now?
Well, the rainy day fund has not been touched, so it's $1 billion.
Hmm.
But think about this. And so we thought... many of us, I think, at the outset, folks at the JLBC certainly thought that we would have to tap that rainy day fund because it was raining, or so they thought, last spring. But they adopted, a steady state budget. They didn't increase the budget spending at all this year. The feds bailed out DES and the DHS to a large degree and Access. And we got all this federal money. We haven't had to touch our rainy day fund. And it's hard to keep track of it, Bill, but I think in addition to the rainy day fund, we're probably got another billion or two in current surplus money right now. And so, you know, what they choose to do with that will dictate, you know, things going forward. History suggests, Bill, that when when times get like this, the Arizona legislature cuts taxes. And we'll have to see. There is some discussion down there about cutting taxes. And the concern there is a tax cut, of course, is permanent. You just simply can't roll it back once we've cut it in this state.
You know, going back to 1982 with some of your forecasts, did you ever have a I came to town in 1988, and I can't recall a rainy day fund maybe being in this kind of this territory over a billion.
Well, as a share of the budget, the mm-hmm. rainy day fund, frankly, prior to 1995, was targeted at 15%.
Wow!
And so 15% of a budget here would, you know, be in the, you know, 1.6, 1.7 billion range for us. And so technically it has actually been higher, but we got rid of it back then. I am an old historian in this state, Bill. We got rid of it back in the 90s. It was called dead money. It was no friend to the people that wanted to spend it, and it was no friend to the people that wanted to make tax cuts. And so we got rid of it, took it down to 7% of the budget, and we've built it back up. It would be prudent to make sure that we come out of this with a substantial rainy day fund, but at the same time address some needs. I know that there are a number of government public sector employees that haven't had a raise, it seems like, in their lifetime. we do have infrastructure investments that need to be made as well, transportation infrastructure investments. I see the state is getting $4.8 billion from this latest. In the papers are writing, they're estimating $16 billion coming from the feds.
Wow. $4.8
ending up at the state level. Another upwards of $2 billion at the local levels. The universities are going to get some money, but half of it goes to university students. So that's a win-win then. The university gets some money and the students get some money. So that they'll be pleased with that. So, you know, things are looking pretty bright, Bill. The economy's coming up. We've weathered the storm. I think there's going to be a lot of recovery in those hard-hit areas, hospitality, tourism, restaurant and bar. We'll see some recovery in this spring and summer as vaccines are spreading wide. And this federal money is just, the cherry on top of the cake here.
Dennis, I think tourism is going to bounce back faster than a lot of people think. Already the airlines are adding new people. May through July bookings are looking very, very strong right now.
We've certainly, our family's come out of the rabbit hole. We have May bookings, and we have July bookings, we have September bookings, and we have November bookings. So we're going to do our part.
Yeah, there's a lot of pent-up travel demand. Are there some sectors of our economy that you would like to touch on briefly that just have been laggards through all of this, just not really producing very well? And, of course, tourism would be an obvious one, but any others?
Think about those areas that support large gatherings. And so I'm talking about security, work at a large athletic events or large entertainment venues. And it's not just the entertainers or the athletes I'm talking about. I'm talking about all of the support staff. Think about how many people work here with the with the Phoenix Suns and with the Arizona Diamondbacks and all of those layoffs that had to take place as we're operating without people in the stands. And that's certainly with NCAA football up here with the Devils, or you guys with the Wildcats down there, all of those support people, I really truly feel badly for them because it's hard to replace those jobs, at least certainly in the until we could get people back in the seats. And I truly believe that's going to take a better part of another year yet.
You do? You think it's going to take that long?
Yeah, the Diamondbacks have rolled, many of us season ticket holders have rolled over to 2022.
Okay.
And they've honored all of those deposits we made back in 2020, in the fall of 2019, actually, for the 2020 season, are going to be honored for 2022. So, that's stretching dollars out of, over a couple of seasons and no revenue coming in, with people in the seats. So, the vendors, the food suppliers, people in those industries have really, really taken it on the chin. And it would really be nice to see, Bill, if we could target some of that federal aid and federal money right directly to those poor folks that have really suffered throughout this pandemic.
I've got about 10 seconds for the answer to this question, Dr. Dennis Hoffman. Work from home is here to stay.
Absolutely, it is. I'm not getting directions from the university. As long as we can maintain a productive staff and deliver the services and the research that we're on the line to deliver, I suspect that there's going to be a lot of work from home.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dennis Hoffman. Always a pleasure. Glad we could reconnect. Thanks.
Bill, great to chat with you and all the folks at Tucson.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Dr. Dennis Hoffman, director of the Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business up at ASU. We'll take our mid-show break. CBS News is next.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety.
To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Repark Zoo.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show to the sounds of Steely Dan. A little bit of bump music there on this Thursday afternoon. Tomorrow we have Raul Grijalva with us for our Friday Focus interview. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, the perfect time of year to go over there in March. A spring is blooming. Or what do they say? Spring has sprung. But anyway, 13 acres, amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. And of course, while you're there picking up all of your beautiful things, 3384 East River Road, stop by Zocalo Village and look at the Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, and all sorts of gift ideas. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education. He's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. Dr. Hendricks was named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. How are you today, Bob?
I'm doing well, Bill, and thinking a little bit about, educational events as they unfold. We seem to have, new chapters and new intrigue every day. Just when we think we're getting closer to the end, something else pops up.
Well, these enrollment numbers are off the charts. The decrease in enrollment, nearly 42% of this year's enrollment loss statewide. The Arizona children who are in the kindergarten, there's about an 11% decline from the previous year. These numbers are very troubling, Bob Hendricks.
They are, Bill, and we don't even know where some of these children are, which is the frustrating thing. I mean, we know that some have opted to go to other school environments, and whether they'll remain in their new home or not, we don't know. But there are also a group of youngsters that are unaccounted for, and how the district is able to get them back if they ever do, is a continuing issue.
It's almost like it's going to be it will be a tremendous amount of catch up involved in getting some of these students to come back. And I know that many parents in the Tucson Unified School District still are not comfortable, Dr. Hendricks, in letting the kids go back. I know that Dr. Trujillo was doing a survey, and I think it was about 1 in 3 parents said they're just not ready to send the kids back.
Right. I have read that, and I've also listened to some interviews, particularly from some parents in the Sunnyside School District that have similar concerns. And I think that would be reflected in every one of our local districts. There's a group of parents, that for whatever reasons they might have, that don't want their children back into a social and physical environment that, is going to vary from school to school. I don't think you can even generalize within a school district. Every school has different physical configurations. Some of the classrooms are very small. Social distancing is almost next to impossible. And when we talk about bringing children back in a one-to-one situation in a physical setting, in-person learning, it's complicated. It's really complicated. And it gets even more complicated, I think, sometimes in the high school and middle school environment where we have hallways, corridors that are not spacious. They're not accommodating for any kind of social distancing. You've got restrooms where it's possible close physical distancing, and it's a problem. So I understand why parents might be hesitant and why they might say, yes, the time may come, but the time is not now to send the children back, particularly when you're close to the end of the semester. And maybe the thinking is, you know, this year is pretty much lost already. Let's give it the summer and let's hope that we can have a good start in the fall and get our kids back into a regular classroom.
And what happened to standardized tests in 2020?
Oh, well, you talk about spring has sprung. Standardized testing has sprung as well. Hmm. You know, it used to be that the standardized testing was always the spring ritual, and educators would devote, you know, weeks to prepare and then set aside a week or two for the actual testing, which, you know, a lot of people say is a, you know, lost learning time because it's really a sit and drill kind of experience. But we thought we got a reprieve from that. In fact, you know, during the pandemic, you know, the federal government said that you don't really need to give this kind of multiple choice test, and we don't need to administer it this spring. However, having thought that that requirement has been dropped, the Biden administration recently decided that they wouldn't provide a waiver for federally mandated tests. And so every state is faced with the reality now that there has to be some kind of testing this spring. And so the administration was really giving states several options. One is to delay or shorten the tests. And some states have decided that they'll forego the test this spring, but they still have to comply, so they would have to give it in the fall. So that's one option. Another option that was given by the federal government was to give the test virtually. Really haven't quite figured out how that would work, but that's something that's a possibility. Or they also gave them the option that students were learning remotely, that they could skip giving the test to them altogether. So those options were there. And then there's the last option, which was ignore all previous options and and go ahead and give the test. And so we have a handful of states that decide to require all students to physically return to campus, you know, to take the test this spring. Whether they're learning in person or they're learning remotely, they would be required to come back to a physical location to take the test. And there are four states that have at this point made that decision: Florida, Indiana, Utah, and Arizona.
Hmm.
The Governor Ducey signed an executive order on February 18th requiring in-person statewide assessment, whether a student's attending in person or online. And this applies to students from grades 3 through 12. And so, you know, the governor previously suspended letter grades for this year, saying that school districts did not have to give letter grades. However, he is continuing with the spring testing mandate with a couple caveats. One is that instead of a 4-week window in which states normally are required to give the test, he's extended that to 6 weeks, which essentially is that school districts in our state are going to have to give the test between early April and mid-May. I don't know how that's going to work. Essentially, districts are going to have to tell parents, that group that we talked about earlier, that you're going to have to bring your children in, you know, for testing. And whether parents will comply, whether this group of students, you know, they'll get a majority of students, an aggregate of students that will be tested or not. I don't know. But one of the recommendations of the governor's office was to use gyms, gymnasiums, as testing locations because they thought that this would be a better opportunity for social distancing, because schools really don't have the space to bring everybody into every classroom and to comply with the 6 foot social distancing to give the test. So they're going to have to find alternative physical locations for this testing.
And then
I was just going to say
good luck finding a lot of these students and trying to get them to school. This is going to be a mess.
It's going to be a mess. And, you know, there's going to be serious consideration of the validity of the results, because we may not be looking at the whole population. We're going to be looking at basically those students and the parents of those students who agreed to allow their students to be in a physical environment. And so the other students may or may not be part of that population that are going to be tested.
All right.
So the one good thing about that, Bill, is that the federal government previously had a requirement that states must test 95% of the student population. Don't have to comply with that now.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. Dr. Robert Hendricks will be with us after we take the break. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, New Mexico. It's exciting. They're doing a slow rollout of reopening tourism to out-of-state visitors. Silver City in Grant County, one of our longtime sponsors. We've sent so many folks over there, and there is light on the horizon. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson, all sorts of outdoor activities, where to stay and what to do at southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, is with us on the live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Rick has called us, and Rick Grinnell would like to make a comment. Go ahead, Rick. Hi.
Hi, Rick. Doctor, I have grandkids that are getting ready to go to primary school. And what my question is, with all this delay in education, the holdouts because of the pandemic and everything else going on, what are they going to do if they start having to literally set children back a grade, and then you have an influx of new students coming in a grade? I haven't heard any discussion about how they're going to address the potential overflow of some of these students being set back, and then the crunch of the population of students in certain grades.
Rick, that's a good question, because I think people are really scratching their heads as what they're going to do with what we're really considering to be a lost year. And I think as we talked about testing earlier, I'm going to predict the results are going to show that there's going to be a wider achievement gap because of this year of lost learning. And I don't think retention is going to be the answer to this. I think we're going to have to find ways to help students catch up, and that's going to mean supplemental education. I don't think we can do it within the traditional school day, and which leads me to something I wanted to talk a little bit about, because there's a push towards mandatory summer school.
Right.
And the suggestion is that that we might have a chance to recover some of this lost ground if we could bring students in for a block of time in the summer. And there are some states that are looking at a six-week block of time over the summer where students, particularly at the elementary grade levels, are required to come in, because we know that there's a population of kids that already are behind. And who knows where they are educationally at this point. Maybe one of the results of the testing will really show us how far behind we are. But this is an idea that's got some momentum. Not much momentum here in the state of Arizona, because it's a funding issue. And the Brookings Institute, which studies these matters, have indicated that that if we were to put a six-week summer session in, for example, it would cost nationally about $8.1 billion of additional salaries and related expenses. But what are we going to do? Rick, you remind us of the fact that, you know, we've got kids that are just going to be wallowing. They're not going to be able to catch up without extra help. And whether it's extra time after school or weekend sessions or summer school, we're going to have to find some way to do it, and we're going to have to fund it, because we can't expect our personnel to come in and put in this extra time without some kind of a help. But students are going to need it, and schools are going to have to be reimbursed to make this happen. Again, I don't see this happening in Arizona, but there are other states, for example, the state of Virginia, that is looking at some kind of mandatory program that requires students to come back to school for additional time.
It just seems that would be a good idea to get some of the kids back on track. Otherwise, it's almost like it's a lost, this has been a lost year. I don't want to say a lost generation, but it's been a lost year for so many of the kids.
Well, there are federal dollars that are available for low economic communities to provide some kind of programs in the summer. And I know TOSD has a program that that they offer to youngsters, and it's voluntary. You know, but many parents, I think, see as an opportunity to help enrich their students, you know, during that time when they might not have anything else to do. But we've got this extra pressure now, not only for enrichment social activities, but for enrichment academic activity as well.
How are we doing with getting teachers back in the classroom? Is there, think there will still be a hesitancy?
I think there's some hesitancy, but, you know, my sense is that most teachers are ready to get back in. You know, we've done a good job in the state in inoculating teachers. Some states have not done well. They have not put teachers in that priority group that our state has. And I think there's a large percentage of teachers that are now been vaccinated, feel more comfortable being back into the classroom. Still a physical issue as to where students are going to go. It's fine for the governor to mandate that classes be back in session. And the reality is that most Pima County schools are in session, have been in session, maybe not 5 days a week, but they're moving to that. I know Amphitheater is. Catalina Foothills is already in a five-day session. And so they're making it work. However, you know, there's still this problem of social distancing, and teachers are going to have to be alert, and they're going to need extra assistance in the school to make sure that restrooms are monitored, playgrounds are monitored, because children by their very nature are very social, and they're not going to follow that rule. They just are not. And so we just have to keep reminding them and monitoring them, and teachers can do some of that, but they're going to need extra support. So I think it's going to work. And, you know, we've got a very short season before the end of the school year, and districts will have an opportunity to do some ramping up over the summer, and hopefully in August we can be back to a normal schedule, as normal as it can possibly be, and there'll be less remote learning and students will be back in the classroom. But, you know, there's still, as you said, Bill, there's still people who want their youngsters at home, and so districts have been able to work out arrangements with certain teachers who maybe aren't comfortable going back in the classroom, and they can continue to be the remote instructors.
All right, Dr. Robert Hendricks. Bob, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Stay safe.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Bill. All right, Bob Hendricks with us, our education contributor. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show, our Thursday edition. We've got Dave Ramsey and his very popular show about money that is coming up next. I love the way Dave handles some of these calls when he's pretty straightforward about money advice, and he'll let you know the way it is. All right, on behalf of Tom Fairbanks, I'm Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow at 12:04. Have a great afternoon, everybody.